Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, February 10th. This is Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM, and my name is Magnus Thiebold. I'm one of your hosts for the hour, and joining me today is...
Peter R.H.
And we do think Stephen Fan's going to be joining us shortly as well, so we can talk a bit about some of the developments. I hesitate to say the world because it's really all consumed with Donald Trump and his endless stream of threats and crazy ideas.
If I can just interject, Magnus, we have to. I got some stuff on my tablet, but we got to. I'm going to, after I say what's on my tablet here, I'm going to go over to the updates because he has said he wants to have a tariff on aluminum and steel and so on. And he said at the Super Bowl yesterday and or something like that.
Yeah, he did an interview with Fox that aired after the Super Bowl.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. And so I don't know. It's 1 p.m. Eastern time, so I guess we can, if there's some kind of, actually, one thing I have on my tablet right now.
Yeah.
I just want.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, what happened over the week was, you know, when we were airing on this program last week, of course.
Which I heard.
Yeah. Mexico had already struck a deal to delay tariffs.
And later on in that same day.
And then later on that same day with a second phone call
Between
Trump and our prime minister, they also ended up with a deal to delay tariffs for 30 days. Of course, in the meantime, Trump has proposed taking over the Gaza Strip as American territory, although he tends to talk about it entirely in like property development terms, you know, taking an ownership stake in... You know, calling it a development site and a demolition site and, you know, an opportunity to turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East, which, you know, on the face of it seems like a completely crazy idea. Certainly doesn't seem to respect in any way the Palestinians who live there. And, you know, whether or not they are... in any way interested in leaving on their own, because he says that American troops won't go. But if they don't want to leave, it's either going to be American troops or Israeli troops. Either way, it's going to be ethnic cleansing. And that's pretty ugly. Meanwhile, more departments, government departments in the U.S. have been all but sort of shut down by Elon Musk and his Doge team, as well as according to reports, substantial amounts of government data has, at the very least, been put on threat and perhaps copied into private hands, which seems very dubious. And, of course, you know, yesterday's, as you mentioned, with Trump's words yesterday, another threat against Canada, saying, you know, he wants it to be both in terms of in the interview he did, because he did an interview on Fox News afterwards, and he also talked to the media on Air Force One flying out to wherever, to where the game, the Super Bowl was, which he attended, making more, you know, confirming threats against Canada and his desire to take us over, but also announced that there would be tariffs introduced on steel and aluminum and other metal products. This one is not just for Canada and Mexico, but it's in fact applies to all countries, but does seem to go against his commitment last week to hold off on tariffs.
Well, I kind of this is so terrible. I'm agreeing with a Doug Ford, but Doug Ford, Doug Ford has been kind of good, I think, with all this. I mean, he said that you're just changing where the actual goalpost is all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no fan of Doug Ford, and from what I've seen, his role in Ontario. Yeah. Politics from way over here in BC. But I would agree with you that I think he's had a good line on this particular conflict, right? I mean, I think he's, he's said the right things, and I think he's taken the right positions, and he's, one thing he said, and I think our Premier, David Eby, has done the same thing, is that, what's most important is that we as Canadians stand together. Provincial leaders need to stand together with the federal government to oppose all these different sorts of attacks. And it's a bit of a contrast to Alberta and Daniel Smith, Premier of Alberta, who seems to be really trying hard to split the difference and really represents a bit of a voice out of sync with most of the rest of Canada.
I kind of agree with that a little bit, because right now I'm not agreeing with Rebel News and Ezra Levant, because he's an Uncle Tom Canadian right now. I'll kind of just say, I think what you're saying is true, a criticism, but it's also that I think that Alberta has felt kind of shafted by Canada. And that's just a little bit to them, but I'm agreeing with some of your criticism. I just thought would put that in. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into that issue, but I think, Alberta has a bit of a stick up its butt without as much justification as they'd like to think. My take on Alberta is they're bold and brash and tell everyone to F off when they're doing well. And when they're not doing well, they whine that nobody likes them.
Well,
and
Magnus,
you behave that way, that's
it's also about the amount the federal government is taking from them, taxation through various ways.
Yeah, but they're on the same arrangement as everybody else.
Okay, well, right? That's okay. I plead a bit of ignorance, but I just thought I would.
Anyway, what I was going to ask you about, because I don't follow Rebel News, and they are sort of a right wing outlier.
Just Uncle Tom.
So what are they saying?
Oh, they're saying, no, it's like, it's pretty bad. It's like, they're blaming us, in a sense. This is what the Uncle Tom Canucks are doing right now. And all my fellow...
Like, we're not doing enough about...
Yeah, it's like they don't get the point. Like, it's bad. I mean, it's like, I've had common ground with a lot of stuff on Rebel News, but not now. Because right now it's pretty bad. They don't get the point. They all love Trump, and you're an Uncle Tom Canadian at this point if you like anything about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Can I just, Magnus?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So this is from CTV News. Trump's invasion threats violate international law. Canadian ambassador from Paris. Canadian ambassador in France says United States President Donald Trump's invasion threatens violate international law. I'm just saying that in order to respect international law, you don't threaten your neighbors by invasion, Stephen Dion said Monday at Canada's embassy in Paris, one day after Trump said he would impose a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum imports, including imports from Canada. So I'm going to take that off the tablet now and put whatever updates they got now on this tariff things. But I thought that I just wanted to put that in for the show.
Well, I read an interesting article this morning about it was from a business professor who'd written a book, who is a business professor who specifically teaches and studies negotiating tactics, and he was sort of talking about Donald Trump's approach to negotiating, which is something we're seeing every day now in the news with his many, many statements. And he talks about, Donald Trump's approach is, you know, based on both, you know, his own book, The Art of the Deal, which he wrote, you know, a couple of decades.
I don't even know if he was the writer of it.
Well, it actually said it was ghostwritten, and they actually named the person who ghostwrote it for him by talking to Trump. So, I mean, it's not like it's not his thoughts or ideas, but he didn't sit at the typewriter or the computer and actually compose it, you know. And he talked about the difference between distributive negotiation and integrative negotiation. And, you know, Trump uses the what's called the distributive negotiating style, which is basically sees the negotiation as a zero-sum game of win and loss. It's not about looking for a mutually effective deal. It's not looking for a win-win. It's looking for him to win and others to lose. And the more, you know, the more he gets, you know, the more he wins. And that can work sometimes in business, but you know, the other style of negotiating, which is what tends to work in many situations, but particularly in international affairs, is the integrative negotiating style, where you're trying to, you know, you're trying to find a path forward that benefits all parties, and one that benefits everybody the most. And the problem, you know, big problem, you know, with the two different styles, particularly in the area of international affairs, is that the distributive approach, that the winner takes all, the, you know, zero sum game of trying to get the most from your negotiating partner, is that it doesn't really take into account the need to build long lasting relationships, which is really important in international relations. You can't just go and you know, abuse your neighbors or, you know, try and exploit them, and then come back the next time and expect there to be a good situation for negotiation. You can't expect to at some point later turn and go, hey, I need some help with something, and have people go, oh yeah, sure, we're there for you. If you've been, you know, so, and you see that with all the statements Trump has made since the election, in that, you know, his whole approach is to try and bully and threaten everyone he's working with. And he, you know, from his mindset, he sees that as a way to get what he wants. But the problem is, he wants to get what he wants, and he doesn't care what anyone else wants.
Well,
that can be disruptive. I just want to finish my point, and then I'll let you jump in.
Yeah.
You know, and it's become apparent that, you know, just through the threats on Canada, the threats on Mexico, you know, both the tariffs and the threat to sovereignty, the threats to Denmark, wanting to take over Denmark, the threats to Panama, and even, you know, even the sort of lack of clarity in his positions. What were the tariffs about? Were the tariffs about the border? Were the tariffs about supporting American trade? Were the tariffs about fairness? Were the tariffs just a negotiating position? Nobody can tell what he's thinking. And I think everybody can see, because unlike, you know, business negotiations which happen in private, you know, and often even the terms of a deal are, when they're finally reached, are secret, this is all happening in public. And every other negotiating partner, every other partner for the United States can see what's going on. They can see that Donald Trump and the United States are not really a reliable partner that you can work with. You know, when it comes to the tariffs, Donald Trump negotiated the USMCA, the US-Canada-Mexico Free Trade Agreement, himself in 2018. And here we are, the first thing he doesn't get in power, and essentially rip that up and ignore it. So what's the point of making a deal with Donald Trump if he doesn't honor them? And so just, I'm going to let you, I just want to finish my point before we change it. And then you can, and we're already seeing the impact of that. You know, Europe is already gearing up to opposed tariffs. I saw an article yesterday that the leader of Singapore, you know, making statements that, you know, Singapore and other nations in Asia need to get used to the idea that the United States is not a reliable partner and cannot be counted on to be a friend going forward, and that they need to chart, you know, a different path. And that's particularly significant for a country like Singapore, which is basically a small city-state, you know, that trades for, you know, is quite successful in the economic realm, but also has to trade for all its, for the resources it needs. And also, you know, it's not large enough to have a substantial military of its own. So it relies on its international relationships for its security. And the United States is presenting itself as not a reliable partner. And you're seeing that, you know, in other venues. And I think as the Trump presidency goes on, and maybe this is what, you know, he wants, but as it goes on, I think he's going to have more and more trouble getting cooperation from international partners that he can't bully out of them. You know, it's the idea that, you know, his America First policy really equals America alone by alienating all its partners.
Okay, the art of the deal 33 years ago meant that he was bankrupt. Okay? No, quite seriously. So isn't that book from the 1980s, the art of the deal? Okay, so he was born rich. This is the big secret, which is not so much of a secret if you're a sensible individual. He squandered the family fortune and became bankrupt 33 years ago.
Yeah.
So then he made himself a media star. Roger Stone was always interested since the 80s in making president in the United States.
Point is, and that sort of goes to my point too, that, you know, his style didn't necessarily get him success, his negotiating style of, because, you know, even in business you need friends and partners. Go ahead.
This is from NBC Live Updates. Trump could announce tariffs on steel and aluminum today. A separate announcement about reciprocal tariffs for every country could come as soon as tomorrow, the president said yesterday. And what's sort of the key here is it could. You notice that it says it could come tomorrow. You don't know. It's what Doug Ford has been saying. Changing the goalposts.
Well, we don't even know. He announced this sort of off the cuff on a flight yesterday, and who knows if he's going to follow through.
So I got some, hopefully that's an update, because it is now 17 after 1 p.m. East Coast time, and he hasn't really said anything that I can pick up on my tablet. Anyway, so, and as I said, I read that from CTV News just a little while ago. It was that he is breaking international law. And I think we have to get going to international law at this point. We have to right now, because we got to go to the United Nations about this immediately, because he is violating it.
Yeah.
And also Amazon to Canadians is selling 51st Canadian state merchandise, supposedly.
I haven't seen it on Amazon itself.
I saw it on my tablet.
Yeah, I did as well. You know, one thing I think is interesting, and I'm not sure why Canada and the Mexico haven't done this yet, and I haven't seen any reporting on it as yet, but, you know, the USMCA, the Free Trade Agreement, those come with resolution mechanisms for disputes. And, you know, it seems to me it would be worth pursuing those, not because I think they're going to be successful, but it's worth pursuing because it more exposes that. And this hurts Donald Trump and the United States, you know, to have it shown that, you know, here's an agreement with an agreed upon dispute resolution process. And if you can make an agreement with the United States and then they ignore that agreement and its resolution processes, that's hurtful to them. They've hurt themselves by that in terms of their standing in international and with other partners. So, I think you know, even if we were successful, it seems like Donald Trump would ignore that kind of stuff. But I think it's worth pursuing all those avenues, even if it's just to show what's happening.
Well, I mean, it's a violation of that agreement because there's no emergency with the border. I mean, because I had the news article a few weeks ago I brought that I misplaced, but it was that basically it said that the Emergency Order Act, which I'm getting a few things wrong here, but probably, but it's something like there's something that emergency, in case of emergency, they can do tariffs. Well, there's no emergency. It's a non-existent emergency. So he's violating one regulation after the other. I like to present a little conspiracy theory about Bill Gates, because Bill Gates met up with Donald Trump. And I find it very interesting that Bill Gates has not been one iota critical of Donald Trump. He was interviewed on CBC Radio Sunday morning, pre-taped, of course, but he hasn't said anything about Robert Kennedy Jr. being critical of that. Mm-hmm. He hasn't come to bat for Canada. So, Bill Gates, if you're hearing it now, we would appreciate hearing Canada if you're against all these tariffs.
Well, one thing I'd say in addition to that is that almost no major public figures and public political figures have really come out and said anything in opposition to anything Trump has done, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, you know, whether they're, you know, former presidents, you know.
I actually like to bring up something. And
you know what? But why are, you know, maybe they're saving their for their moment, but, you know, what does Barack Obama or Bill Clinton have to say, or even George W. Bush?
Well,
you know, where's Kamala Harris, right?
Ralph Nader has a weekly hour-long radio show. You can get it on the internet, and he hasn't mentioned anything about this yet.
Yep.
This is what I wanted to bring up, Magnus. Yep. I'm listening on air. Possible help from this radio station. The governor of Kentucky was a YouTube posting or something. He said something like this. Now, I cannot email the governor of Kentucky because we live in Canada. They say, what state are you in? Now, they have a phone number, and I have my phone. I'm the last of the landliners, and I have a sort of a phone. I can't even phone Chilliwack or something. So I'm after this show, I will maybe go over how I can contact the governor of Kentucky, because actually he has made a respectful statement about it. Because the thing is, his bourbon has been taken, but he was Democrat governor. However, he's part of the red states.
To be fair, some other Democratic governors, particularly in northern states that, you know, close to Ontario, which do a lot of trade with Canada, have also, you know, made some statements. But of course, we know that being Democrats, Donald Trump and the Republicans aren't even going to listen. They don't really care.
Well, I still want to have you help me phone the office after the show.
Yeah. All right. Onwards and upwards. So, hopefully listeners won't get totally bored of hearing about this stuff, because, you know, it's gonna be a lot, because this wild ride is going to go on for the whole 4 years of the Trump presidency, if in fact the Trump presidency ends after 4 years.
Well, he could be impeached. I mean, I'm actually thinking of, in a sense, taking it to the over to the UN and have him impeached. Or Canada do something, because, and the other thing is about him being the 51st state. You got to go to the King Machucky first about that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, of course, you know, they have, you know, if they don't care about the consent of Canada and Canadians, they're not going to care about.
No, but that is what the legality is.
Yeah, yeah.
And King Charles has been silent about it. Thanks a lot, Chucky, for basically nothing.
All right. Let's go to some local stuff in our area. We have a report from Jesse Wentzloff about New West's toilet strategy, which may not seem to be as important as the craziness in international affairs, but it actually does make a big difference to urban livability, and especially as we, in all our communities in Greater Vancouver, have issues with homelessness. And, of course, just people traveling around who need to use a facility. So this is a report from Jesse. Hope you enjoy it.
The City of New Westminster is developing a citywide toilet strategy to address gaps in the availability, safety, maintenance, and dignity of toilet facilities for all members of the community. Beginning with extensive consultation and research, the strategy aims to take into account the wide range of needs that residents of New Westminster have when it comes to public toilet access, and to partner with businesses, faith-based and nonprofit organizations to ensure equitable access to toilets across the city. I'm Jesse Wensloff, Public Affairs Coordinator for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and I sat down with John Stark, Manager of Social Planning with the City of New Westminster, who is overseeing the citywide toilet strategy.
I've been with the city for 18 years, and social planning deals with everything from childcare to seniors to people who aren't housed, trying to meet their needs.
Thanks for joining me, John. Why is access to toilets important?
Access to toilets is important because it's a human right and dignity issue. And we have individuals in our community who face challenges or barriers when accessing toilets. And these are seniors, people with disabilities, people with health conditions, families with young children. And recently, people are unhoused. They face really difficult challenges because of just the lack of toilets which operate late evenings and early mornings. So they have fewer options than even others.
How would you describe the City of New Westminster's current status or situation when it comes to public toilet facilities?
Well, we do have public toilets in our civic facilities, parks and rec facilities. I would say that there are times and locations where access is more challenging, late evenings, early mornings. We are doing a mapping exercise right now. We realize that some neighborhoods are not as well served as others. And also where there are businesses and faith-based and nonprofits, they tend to have more options than other communities, which may be more residential in nature.
What is the citywide toilet strategy?
The citywide toilet strategy, it's really taken a comprehensive look at access to toilets. It's a standalone strategy. Our social planning section is involved, which is quite unique because typically this would be an engineering endeavor. And the reason social planning is being involved is just as stated, looking at those individuals that face barriers or challenges to access. And as noted, seniors, people with disabilities, health conditions, families with young children, and the unhoused. We're mapping out current facilities. We're also doing case study research with a lot to look at partnerships, recognizing as a smaller municipality and also limited dollars. Just increasing the supply would be difficult. So how do we look at partnerships? And from that, also working with those groups to better understand their needs and to work with them around potential strategies and solutions. And as noted, partnerships will be important both with businesses and faith-based and nonprofits. And we have had some success also working with the senior levels of government. The city worked with BC Housing around the provision of a sanitation trailer, which is near our nightly shelter. It has two toilets, two sinks, and two showers. And in November 2024, there were close to 1,300 visits to that one facility. So it definitely shows the need, but recognizing that's one facility and how do we provide access in other areas.
You mentioned doing research and working with partners and other organizations. What have you learned from that process?
Yeah, in the United Kingdom, they have community toilet schemes. And this is where local governments work with businesses. And typically, they provide subsidies to those businesses to offset some of the cost of providing wider public access. And that's been quite successful in increasing the availability, including some businesses do operate during late evenings and early mornings. So that's been one potential opportunity that we're looking at for the City of New Westminster. Another is with regard to Edmonton in Winnipeg. They've partnered with faith-based and nonprofit organizations to provide access to their toilets. And in the case of Edmonton, they had people who were unhoused who got supported employment opportunities in the form of attendance. So they would help monitor and clean bathrooms. And this was a way of a dual benefit with regards to providing access, but also support employment. And I think there are lots of other examples. So we're really trying to keep an open mind and see what's out there and maybe take a different approach other than just providing more. But how can we do this that really meets those needs that I talked about earlier?
How does this project interact with other city initiatives?
We do have a crisis response pilot project, and that's looking at the three crises of homelessness, mental health, and substance use. And I think this does relate to that. As noted, one of the groups that does face significant challenges are people unhoused. We see with regards to the solution around that is trying to get additional 24/7 shelter capacity and, more importantly, supportive housing where people have access to their own toilet and other amenities. So we are advocating for that. As a city, we have 52 new units of supportive housing that'll be ready for occupancy in spring. We're also advocating over a 10-year period for about 350 supportive housing units to meet the needs of our unhoused population. And also recognize when you look at BC Housing, you have a mandate to meet the needs of the unhoused 24/7. And we do have a nightly shelter right now, so we're trying to convert that to a 24/7 shelter. But until we get that adequate emergency shelter and supportive housing capacity, there is a need to work with the province and faith-based and nonprofits to try to meet that need.
How do you balance the need for standard bathroom facilities with the more intensive needs or the needs of those who need more support when it comes to bathrooms?
I think for the general population, in some cases, that might be just improved signage and wayfinding and looking at some of those partnerships. But when we're talking about some of those individuals and groups that face barriers and challenges, then I think that's where those partnerships, Crohn's and Colitis Canada, they have a Go Here app. So we're potentially looking at how we could partner with them. So seniors, persons with disabilities and health conditions could, and also working with businesses to try and increase the supply of washrooms that could be available in businesses, but make it as easy to locate those. And also just a sense that individuals don't have to make a purchase, that the business could provide that information and make it as comfortable as possible. That's really important. And then, like I said, with regards to people unhoused, looking at partnerships with faith-based and nonprofit organizations, working with the province. And I think that's going to be key to trying to make some progress in this area.
Where are you currently in the process of developing and implementing the citywide toilet strategy?
We're looking at bringing this forward, a report to council along with the strategy in fall of this year. Right now, we've just done a survey on our Be Heard New West platform. We've had over 400 responses, so that's really positive. We're just completing focus groups with the groups I mentioned earlier that face barriers or challenges. And we've done a lot of case study research, so we'll bring that all together. We are working with the Community Action Network, which is people who lived and live an experience of homelessness, poverty, substance use, and they're actually working with our social planning section and other staff to actually inform the strategy itself. We've also brought on a gerontologist to inform that strategy too. So really trying to ensure that the strategy meets a wide array of needs, but really does focus on those individuals that do face those additional barriers and challenges.
You mentioned the survey. Are there other ways that residents or other people who are interested can get involved or provide feedback on the project?
We recognize as the more information we get, we realize that we may have to do additional consultation, including in-depth interviews. So we haven't closed it off. In some ways, it's actually raising more questions, and we just want to make sure that we get as many people involved and that those voices, especially some of the voices that typically go unheard, people who are unhoused, that their needs are addressed and part of the strategy.
Is there anything else you think people should know about this strategy?
I think it's fairly unique on a few cases. Like I said, it's a social planning section that's heading this up and not an engineering section. And again, that's because we're looking at individuals that face additional barriers or challenges. It's a standalone strategy, and typically toilets are seen as a piece of infrastructure and part of larger strategies, either as part of parks and recs or park strategies. So I think that's quite unique. And I think the case study research and the use of partnerships will be really important. And I think there could be learnings and applicability to other municipalities.
Great. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today, John.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Yeah, take care.
That was John Stark, manager of social planning with the City of New Westminster, who is overseeing the municipality's citywide toilet strategy. Currently in the research and consultation phase, a report to City Council on the project's progress will be presented later this spring. You can find more information about the citywide toilet strategy at beheardnewwest.ca/city-wide-toilet-strategy. From CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This piece is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and can also be heard at frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. If the cheerful melody of the eastern bluebird doesn't bring a smile to your face, perhaps its striking color and skillful acrobatics will brighten your day. Males are swathed in sapphire blue feathers with a rufous breast and white belly. The females wear demure shades of the same colors. Look for them along country roads, city parks, and other open woodlands with plenty of grassy patches where they can hunt for insects. These birds can spot a snack from 60 feet away before swooping down to pounce on their prey. Bluebirds build their nests in cavities, like hollow trees and old woodpecker holes. In the early 20th century, eastern bluebird populations were on the decline as invasive house sparrows and European starlings took over available nesting sites. So backyard birders and conservation groups began putting up nest boxes and constructing bluebird trails to help restore their breeding habitat. Thanks in large part to this community-led advocacy, eastern bluebirds are now thriving. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Today's show is in memory of Bud Ayler, whose trail of nest boxes helped bring eastern bluebirds back to southwest Iowa.
If you have anything to say about anything you hear on Speak Up or any other CJSF program, I'd encourage you to send us a text. You can text to our telephone line here in the studio, and we will get it immediately. The number is 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-CJSF. We'd love to hear from you about any of the topics we cover here on the program. Maybe you want to weigh in on what's happening with Donald Trump and tariffs and all the other stuff going on. Or maybe you want to comment on the toilet strategy in New West. Or you maybe want to comment about the story we have coming up in just a few moments about Burnaby City Hall and its climate policy. There was a big rally at Burnaby City Hall just over a week ago, and we have a report on that coming up in a couple of moments. But first, this is Renee Rosnes from a new album from her, which is called Crossing Paths, and this track is Canta Canta Maze from Renee Rosnes.
Tristeza canta.
Cantemaze featuring by Renee Rosnes from her new album, relatively recent album, Crossing Paths, featuring the vocals of Moucha Adnet. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. A raucous crowd turned out at Burnaby City Council to protest the Trans Mountain pipeline. And our Danny Nesvadarani was there to catch all the anger and protest.
For going the way of the dinosaur. Have I seen city after city burn? Lytton, Lahaina, Paradise, Fort McMurray, and now LA.
You're out of order here, and can I have staff from outside come in? We're going to recess the meeting, and we'll come back when you're finished. Thank you.
What you just heard was from a Burnaby City Council meeting on January 28, 2025, where Council and Mayor Mike Hurley was interrupted by local activists from T-Rex Against TMX and Mountain Protectors, two local environmental activist groups, who awarded Council with a Dinosaurs of 2025 award. This award was given due to a closed-door agreement between Council and the Trans Mountain Corporation last September. This agreement would have the Trans Mountain Corp pay the City of Burnaby $20.1 million over the next 21 years to improve the city's emergency response program. This agreement has been heavily criticized by local environmental activist groups due to the fact that the deal also bans the city and the Trans Mountain Corp from making any negative statements about one another, fact, opinion, or otherwise. However, while this was going on inside the council chambers of City Hall, right outside the building was a rally protesting the Trans Mountain Agreement, which included chants.
Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Show me what emergency looks like. This is what emergency looks like. Show me what democracy looks like.
Music.
You won't be fracking long. You won't be fracking long. Wherever fracking threatens, we'll sing our fracking song.
And speeches from Indigenous elders, including Jim Layden, a land defender and Indigenous elder of the Coast Salish Watch House on Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby residents, a fire scientist, as well as nurses and doctors for the environment, all gave speeches during the rally. During many of these speeches, frustrations were expressed towards the council's agreement with Trans Mountain and how they believed that the mayor and city council had been effectively gagged by the deal, not allowing them to speak on the environmental safety concerns associated with the TMX pipeline.
Kim the Dino. We did disrupt the proceedings in there. We asked for an amendment to the agenda. We had two people request to be on the agenda of the meeting and were denied. So we interrupted, we told them, what did we tell them, Dino? We told them, yeah, we said, look, you know, gagging your staff from speaking even facts about Trans Mountain is outrageous. And $20.1 million to pave the road for all of those children and young people at schools and at SFU to lose their lives in a massive fire is inexcusable. So we want them to do better. We want them to step away from this agreement, which they can do. Just means they don't get any more money, which is fine. They're only getting like a trickle here and a trickle there. So
near the rally's conclusion, RCMP arrested a member of T-Rex Against TMX, who interrupted council proceedings later on in the meeting to state their concerns on the TMX pipeline and the council's agreement with the Trans Mountain Corp. Tara Shusterian, a resident representative of the Burnaby Environment Committee and an organizer for the rally, witnessed the arrest and had this to say about what occurred.
Well, end of the rally, it was an extraordinary, peaceful rally with a lot of, you know, choirs singing, people just singing protest songs. And, you know, people like nurses and doctors and, you know, fire experts coming and just giving us a lecture about, you know, what were the implications if there was a tank farm fire, and you know the health impacts, the you know evacuation, how we should do it. And it was absolutely a peace-loving, peaceful protest with just the dinosaurs dancing. And maybe one of the dinosaurs got a little exuberant and just went inside council chambers. But as I was telling your colleague, there are enough city security personnel inside the city, and they could have easily been escorted out by the city security. We did not have to get three RCMP officers brutally arrest this person, slam them against the, you know, the hood of the police car, and then handcuff them like a ordinary, I mean, like a criminal. They're not a criminal. That's a peace-loving, you know, young person inside that suit, which was just protesting, you know. So it's really a shame. I'm really ashamed of the way this whole thing has been handled by the city. And it just makes me very, very sad. And I think the citizens are going to look at this in a... You know, they're going to be really sad when they see something like this, an ordinary citizen. And yet you have rampant crime and nothing is done. And that's what I told the police officers also. Let's go arrest some criminals instead.
A day later, Police Corporal Mike Calange released a statement on the reasons for the arrest, which stated, on January 28th, 2025... Burnaby RCMP frontline officers responded to a call for service at Burnaby City Hall in regards to a demonstration. When police attended, they noted a group of people outside City Hall peacefully singing and playing music. The people on site were listening to security direction. However, a short time later, one individual entered City Council chambers and was causing a disturbance by interrupting the meeting. The individual refused to leave and was arrested for causing a disturbance. She was transported to Burnaby RCMP cells. The individual was later released from Burnaby RCMP cells with no charges likely being forwarded. Once again, this statement comes from Police Corporal Mike Calange. On the night of the arrest, CJSF also attempted to receive comment from City Council on the incident. No comment was given. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And remember, if you want to comment on anything you hear here on CJSF 90.1 FM, send us a text. You can do that to our studio line right here in the studio. We'll see it right away. 778-782-2573. Sounds like Donald Trump is talking as we speak, although maybe it's just more off the cuff comments.
Well, it's on my tablet here. He seems to be in New Orleans. He has this big map. It says Gulf of America on it.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'd like to bring up in the remaining time, I'm going to read from a 1947 in a newspaper. It's actually a Portland newspaper. It's not a Canadian one.
And I do want to point out to our listeners that it is, in fact, the physical newspaper from 1947.
Yes, I bought it.
You can rustle it a bit so people believe us.
It's okay. It's a bit too fragile. Okay, might as well just get this over with. One of my unprofessionals on this show is that I read things too much. But it's this is Harry Truman went to Canada. Now, he went to it a bit before Thursday, June 12th, 1947, because how could... June 11th. Okay, just... Here we go. Individual rights get U.S. backing. Ottawa, June 11th. And remember that this is an UP. What is UP? United Press?
United Press. One of the... I don't think it exists anymore, but it was one of the big press syndicates that shared news amongst multiple news organizations.
It's of another era where it was hot off the wire. You got it because they were still using telegraph.
There is still AP, which is the Associated Press. Similar idea.
So they just this from the Oregonian, Portland, Oregon. So they got it from United Press. Ottawa, June 11th. President Truman
reaffirmed his doctrine of anti-totalitarianism in a speech to the Canadian Parliament Wednesday. It was cheered on enthusiastically. He seemed to have the wholehearted backing of America's neighbor to the north. The highlight of his three-day visit to Canada's capital, Mr. Truman was interrupted by applause 41 times when he set forth the principles of his foreign policy to a joint session of Senate and House in the comments chambers. Okay. Cheers came often. He told the Canadians that the United States could count Canada as an ally, in the struggle for peace that is as yet secure, and was cheered. But the most enthusiastic applause came when he said, "We intend to support those who are determined to govern themselves in their own way and who honor the right of others to do likewise." He was cheered again when he said, "We intend to aid those who respect the dignity of the individual, who guarantee him equal treatment under the law, and who allow him the widest possibility liberty to work out his own destiny and achieve success to the limits of his capacity." Throngs cheered Truman. After his speech, Mr. Truman rode with Mackenzie King to the war memorial, where he put a wreath on the actual monument to Canada's war dead. The route was lined by cheering thousands. There were cheers of "What do you say, Harry?" It seemed evident that the Canadian man in the street has taken to the heart of the big nation to the south. From the memorial, Mr. Truman was driven to the historic Chateau Laurier, where he was guest of honor at a parliamentary luncheon tendered by Prime Minister Mackenzie King. At the head table, in addition to Mr. Truman, the Prime Minister and Vicecot Alexander were all Canadian cabinet members, and all
that was Viscount Alexander.
Okay, and all diplomats here of ambassadorial rank. The Russian charge of maybe you can read that last bit here, Magnus. It's the very end of it, because turn it the other way. No, okay. It's at the bottom there of the article. Because it's Russian. We had not yet begun the cold. Well, they hadn't gotten the bomb yet. 1947, September 1947.
The Russian charge d'affaires Nikolai Belovestikov was stated not far from the proceedings. Was seated not far from the president.
So that's the entire thing, unedited.
Yeah.
And so that was what was done.
Of course, you know, and it shows how the kind of nor, you know, American presidents have been coming to visit Canada for quite a long time, and for a long, long time, I'm not sure exactly how long, but you know, it was kind of the thing that the first international trip the president would make would be to come to visit Canada, or nearly one of the first trips. I don't think Trump ever came to visit Canada during his previous term.
Mm.
And I certainly don't think he would get a welcome here at all. You know, I think, you know, normally, you know, visiting American presidents have been met with some protests, for sure, because, of course, there's always going to be people protesting particularly American foreign policy, whether it was Vietnam back in the day I think a lot of welcome and cheers. I don't think any of that would...
Anyway, we got 3 minutes. There was a protest on Saturday, 2 to 3, at the American consulate.
Yeah.
So it looks like from 2 to 3 there's going to be. And what happened was that there were some posters up. I saw the one at Gilmore and Hastings. That was a week and 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. And when I arrived for that one, there were only five other people. Nobody was from the people that put up the poster. But they, anyway, it's a bit whatever. And then this Saturday, there were, I would have say, about 50 people there.
Yeah.
So it's 2 to 3, and it's Pender and Burrard. So you're at Pender and Burrard. You're at the southeast corner of Pender and Burrard. Right. You walk about half a block or so, and you'll... On Saturday at 2 to 3, there'll probably be a lot of people there.
And, of course, last week there was protests in the United States with a protest in every state capital across the United States protesting. I think that was on the 4th last Tuesday. There is another one planned for this coming Monday, the 17th. The same idea, protests at every state capital all across the United States, and we'll see how that goes. I do wonder why they choose to do it on a work day. 17th is a Monday rather than, say, plan it for a Sunday. Well, but I don't know their logic for that. I guess maybe they want people to be present in the state assembly buildings.
I just want to add something about the article,
yeah,
about the last bit about the Russian charge being there. The Soviets got the atomic bomb September 1949. So that was
prior
just
to that.
No.
After that, yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting. But there was still such a bit of a Cold War even previous.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Winston Churchill in his post-war tour across the United States had already made his speech in which he gave the name to the, you know, not the Berlin Wall, but the, what did they used to call it? Anyway, a wall across Europe between
Iron Curtain.
Iron Curtain. Thank you. That's the word. So yeah, I think the tension was there. In our last minute, I just want to quickly give you a quick report on the weather. It is going to be sunny and clear through most of this week. Daytime temperatures a little above zero. Nighttime temperatures down to 6 or 7 degrees, warming up a little towards the week. We're going to get clouds on the weekend with a possibility of either sun or rain. Thanks for joining me today, Peter.
Yes, okay, fine.
Peter R.H., my name is Magnus Thiewald. Democracy Now! Is coming up in just a few moments. Lots more good programming coming up on CJSF as well. Up at noon is Wandering Rhythms. Up at 3 o'clock is typically Tuesday. The Metal Meltdown up at 6 o'clock this evening. And Speak Up will be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. sharp. Please stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up right now.